Michelle, first of all, can I just say, you said, I've worked with you now 7-8 years, and you just said, I didn't know you got a book. I've got two books. So, and they're all on Amazon. So thank you very much for actually recognizing I've got two books. But before we get into talking about legals, I just want to say, this is how relationships are built. So I met Vishal 7-8 years ago when ILA was coming into it, independent legal advice stuff. I must have Googled something, and Vishal happened to work on the high street where I live, and was very kind, A, to give me the time, and B, to give me, actually, when people were charging crazy money, and he was very fair, I guess is probably the thing. We started
I started doing it for sausage rolls.
Yeah. And coffees. And it was Greg's sausage rolls as well. Greg's, it's not the Costa stuff. Yeah. No. So, but 7-8 years later, I would like to think that we are probably a big client of, certainly on that side of the commercials, because we're getting a lot of work now going through.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But doesn't it matter, like, you know, I think making relationship in that way sometimes just builds and grows from...
It grew, like, organically, basically. Yes. I wasn't ever trying to actually get your business. You mentioned a few times you had a lawyer.
Yeah.
And at certain points, you know, you were looking to expand and find someone else.
Yeah.
And it just happened from there. I don't think I ever sort of pushed ourselves onto you or anything like that.
You still don't, and I wish you could push it a bit
it's
more.
It's because we're trying to push you away.
That's what <we're> But the joke of it is, you know, since that conversation 7-8 years ago, we now do a lot of all of our title split and our mentee's title split via your firm. You're now got another person that we're going to meet around for tenant management and tenancy
litigation and stuff. Proceedings. Yeah.
But it just goes to show. So anybody who's doing B2B and looking at how do you grow businesses, you know, sometimes you don't have to force it. Just be genuine, nice and easy to deal with and get things done. And I think your firm are amazing at it.
Thank you.
So let's get to the content. So can you explain why auction purchasers generally incur higher costs compared to standard purchasers when it comes to legal? I'm going to laugh from a legal perspective.
Auction purchases, whenever I talk about them, I start by saying I hate auction purchases.
Okay.
And there's lots of reasons for that. But we do understand it's a way for, you know, commercial people to get a good deal on property. So we understand why people go for them.
Yes.
From a legal perspective, what you get is on a normal transaction, you have 4 to 6 weeks, sometimes shorter, particularly in the kind of stuff you do where time pressures are even more.
Yep.
But you have a period of time to sit down, go through a legal pack, raise inquiries with another solicitor, satisfy yourself that everything's okay, and then you go ahead, you give the green light, you go ahead to exchange. With auction packs, you know, generally what happens is it's 2 days before the auction or the night before. I've had that before a few times.
Yeah.
Client comes in, says, here's the link to the pack, shall I buy it?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's an absolute nightmare for a lawyer because, you know, a lot of the time these packs are not complete. It has missing information, title documents, searches are not there.
Yeah.
And what you then have to do to the client is say, you almost have to advise them the risks of things which are not there.
Yeah,
you have to advise on the unknown.
Yes.
And that's quite hard to do because... Yeah. That could be a whole array of things that could happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can only just say, look, this is a risk.
Yes.
Rarely, you do find them, but sometimes you do have a legal pack which is well put together and it's got everything in there. And sometimes you get a chance to ask questions.
Okay.
But it's quite rare.
Rare, yeah. In an auction setting, especially if you've got 2 days left.
You've got 2 days. Normally, you have to go through the agent, you know, the auctioneer, rather than another lawyer.
Yeah.
And there's questions about, can you rely on that information and all sorts of things like
but
that.
But also, so there's a lawyering thing where you are erring on the side of caution all the time, right?
So we have to err on the side of caution. And when you give us 2 days as opposed to even, say, a week or 2 weeks, the pressure is then on us.
Yes.
To really spot things.
Yes.
And, you know, just...
And is that what? So the time pressure and obviously the amount of information you have to delve through is what pushes the prices up, rightly so, because you're making...
It's risk. It's a risk for you, obviously, commercially, to buy it with when there are unknowns at play.
Yeah.
And it's a risk for us as a lawyer because we don't have enough time to go through it. We're quite quick, myself and Chantel.
Yeah.
You're with us for a reason.
Yeah.
We're quite quick at processing information and spotting things early because we've been doing it for a long time. But it's still difficult.
Yes. Okay.
And the price reflects that.
I agree. And I think the price is fair for the amount of service and the risk reduction that investors are doing by getting you, because they'll be quick to say, you missed this, mate, you know, so we're going to go after you.
And a lot of times people don't want to touch them.
Yeah.
So generally we do give some opinions on the legal pack, you know.
And I've always said to my mentees is, when you are going to use the lawyers, give them at least a week or two, because, you know, don't give them 2 days, because, I definitely don't send them to you when you've still got before. 2 days. Yeah. So clients, including that, may opt for exchanges with delayed completion. Why do they choose this strategy when buying properties?
So the reason you do it is, I mean, that's a commercial thing for you, really. I mean, is it because you want to get finance in place? You want more time to do that? You've got one recently where you're buying a block with some tenants at the moment, and you would want to take that on with vacant possession. So in those circumstances, you need a period for the seller to get the Section 21 notices and get the possession proceedings underway, and then complete afterwards. Evicting tenants, as anyone who's had a tenant would know, is not straightforward. No. And all it takes really is for one tenant to know their rights, to effectively just sit there until a bailiff comes.
Yes.
And, you know, if you've got a period of, say, if you're expecting that to happen in a month, be prepared that
it takes 6 months probably.
It could take 6 months. Yeah. Even that is probably a good case scenario.
Yes, that's
true. It could be even longer.
Yeah. I think delayed exchange with delayed completion, absolutely. In this case that we're buying at the moment, there's two of them. You know, we are doing this for that reason. So we allow the seller to give us an empty vacant possession. But there's multiple reasons. Sometimes I will buy, I'm going to come to you with another one where we're going to go in and do the works. So exchange, do the works, and then complete afterwards.
Yeah. So we're talking about conditional contracts. So this is another a way of structuring your deal. You have a contract which is conditional on someone doing something.
Yes.
It could be completion of your works. Yeah. It could be the tenant's been removed. And the thing you've got to think about is, you know, you come into it with a positive mindset.
Yeah.
Is that all these things are going to happen and I'm going to complete.
Yes.
We have to sort of throw some cold water on that and say, well, have you thought about what happens if it doesn't happen?
Yes.
Do you get your deposit back, which is what you've agreed on your deal? What happens if your works take longer or there's some issues with your works and you need more time? So you need to start thinking about kind of like the worst case, or, you know, just not through rose-tinted glasses. Yeah.
And I think you guys do a very good job at doing that. So I basically managing our expectation, I should say. I think you do really well. Yeah. So last question for you. So what are the two most frustrating things clients do that you wish they wouldn't do? And I kept this question for you because I know off camera we have a lot of giggle about these.
Clients don't frustrate me. I love them all equally. Is that the camera?
Yeah, that's right. So that's what we'll send to the partners. But now...
So I think the main thing is if you don't kind of appreciate or value what your lawyer does, and if you think that once an offer is accepted, you just throw it in the hands of the lawyer and it's just plain sailing from there, which happens, but a lot of the times things come up and you have to deal with them, and it just, you know, we've got law degrees, we've spent 6 years getting to this stage, there's a reason why.
Yes,
it's technical.
Yes.
So almost sort of respect the technicality of these things,
say, oh, can you get it done tomorrow?
And that, you know, we can't prevent people from saying that. I have that multiple times a day. I've probably got it on my phone when I come off this podcast, but having that sort of appreciation for the complexity of things helps, basically.
And the second one,
I'm trying to think now, time pressures. It's connected to your first one, but, you know, it's similar to the
price negotiation. Do people say, oh, why are you charging so much money? You're only pushing some papers.
So, I mean...
I don't say that, by the way. I'm just saying, do people say that?
Some people do negotiate the price, which is fine. But, you know, we know generally, we've been doing this a long time, and we know when something is going to be straightforward and it's a candidate for a price reduction, or when we can see issues. You know, we've had a quick flick through the legal pack and we see issues and we're like, no, you know, we don't want to lose out on time.
Yes, of course, because you're billing something. Your hours, right? Yeah. So, okay, last thing for me. So we've worked together on multiple things. What is What is it that you think makes a good property investor? I mean, you do big deals with big commercials. So what is it that one or two things that somebody needs to have to be successful in property investing?
So I think the main thing is, and you see this all the way from someone starting out to the top,
yeah,
assessing risk effectively.
Okay. Mm.
Not every problem we have to identify most problems to you as a lawyer.
Yes.
And you have to, it's then for you to consider which ones are important, which yes. ones are not.
Yeah.
The people who are good realize that some little technical things, we have to tell you about them,
yeah.
but if it doesn't really have a main, you know, a major effect on what you're planning to do,
yeah.
You can take that view, you
yes.
take a view on it, take the risk, and the property serves whatever purpose you wanted it to serve, its
yeah.
investment or reselling.
So it's almost having that the ability to assess and calculate
you've
risk and making decisions about
yeah.
it.
If you worry about every single thing,
yeah, yeah.
it's
going to
delay the transaction,
yeah.
you're going to annoy the seller.
Yes.
And you know, it's easy for me to say that. I think it comes from experience generally,
yes.
but you know, having that mindset to accurately assess risks and then determine your next path is probably the most important thing.
I think that's a great piece of advice, because I think people who are scared to make decisions don't
you get
analysis paralysis,
yeah, exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Perfect. Vish, thank you so much. I think we're out of time now.